Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
So are you in the mood for a big book? This year, a mammoth biography of Russian President Vladimir Putin landed. It's by Philip Short, longtime foreign correspondent and author. He's also written biographies of Mao Zedong and Pol Pot. For Putin, it's fair to ask if he's the most dangerous man in the world. But this book begins with a boy born in 1952 in what was then Leningrad. Young Putin adored a TV spy series called The Shield and the Sword. In fact, a young Vladimir walked into a local KGB office and asked, "How do I get a job here?" In our conversation with Philip Short, we focused on two questions. How did Putin become so antagonistic to the West? And how did he become such an autocrat at home? I spoke to him on Skype back in July. So let's step back and look through Vladimir Putin's eyes at Russia's relations with the West. A key moment that has been widely written about is December 1989. He is an intelligence officer in East Germany. The Berlin Wall has fallen down, and a mob storms not just the East German secret police headquarters, but also the KGB, where Vladimir Putin is stationed. And he calls a Red Army tank unit for help, and the reply is, "Moscow is silent." What impact does that moment have on him?
It's theatrical, isn't it? "Moscow is silent." Yeah. And it's a paraphrase of Pushkin. He is a person who is in many respects an actor. He assumes guises. If you actually look back at what happened that day, there wasn't a mob storming the KGB headquarters. Yes, there was a crowd who were pretty angry, but they weren't going to do anything. Mm. And he dramatized that in his mind, and he said, "Moscow is silent." Actually, the local Red Army base sent in troops to help him within 30 minutes. So this is typical. You have to be very, very careful in what you believe about what Putin says. One of his friends, a German businessman in St. Petersburg in the 1990s, says he's a shapeshifter. He assumes guises. He assumes images which fit with the narrative that he wants to tell and with the person he's talking to.
And in this case, as Putin years later talks about this moment, what is the narrative he's trying to spin here?
The narrative essentially is one which we've heard very often since, that the collapse of the Soviet Union, the humiliation of the Soviet Union, the failure of the Soviet Union to defend its friends, this was a monumental tragedy. But again, you've got to watch it rather carefully, because he's also said anyone who doesn't want the Soviet Union back again, anyone who doesn't regret the collapse of the Soviet Union, doesn't have a heart. Anyone who actually thinks that it should be brought back, who think they could bring it back, doesn't have a head.
Yeah. Well, speaking of chameleons, speaking of the world, trying to understand what Putin's view really is, let's talk about his relationship with President George W. Bush, Bush 43. You write that, you know, Putin appeared first open to collaborating, working with the West and the United States, and there was that famous chummy moment with George W. Bush. We have a piece of sound on that.
I was able to get a sense of his soul. He's a man deeply committed to his country and the best interests of his country. And I appreciated so very much the frank dialogue.
Now, much is made of what Bush saw or how naive he may have been. But as far as Putin, at a certain point, did he seem open to closer ties with the U.S., NATO, and Western Europe? You write that, quote, "He believed Russia's destiny was as a European state."
He absolutely did. And I think people who fault Bush for being naive, and Condoleezza Rice is among them, who said, "Oh, I winced when you said that." I think they're being unfair. Putin did genuinely believe that Russia's future was with the West, that Russia's future was certainly as part of Europe, and that Russia should become part of what he called the civilized world, which was the Western-led world. So when people say, "Oh, you know, he's been kind of acting from the very beginning and he was always deeply hostile to the West," that is simply not true. there's been an incremental change which has spread out. It's been a kind of tragic inevitability in many ways of what has happened over the last 20 years from a really genuinely pro-Western Putin to a very hostile Putin.
And let me ask you about this change over the two decades of the continuing Putin era, where he sours on a NATO that expands to the east. Many leaders, as you write, in Washington and London and Paris, seem to pledge that NATO is not going to expand to the east. Eventually, it adds notably Poland and other Central European countries. Let's listen to George Bush again in his inaugural address in 2005.
We will persistently clarify the choice before every ruler and every nation. The moral choice between oppression, which is always wrong, and freedom, which is eternally right.
So here, George Bush is seen to be making a nod toward people, including in Central and Eastern Europe, and their agency to decide their futures. But as far as Putin, how is he reading this?
He was reading it as a commitment by the United States to promote democracy in the rest of the world, but not just democracy, but the American conception of democracy. And it was one of the elements which convinced Putin that America wanted to call the shots and that Russia would absolutely have to follow. Both countries, I think it's really important to say this, both countries, the United States and Russia, made mistakes. Things could have worked out differently. But who won the Cold War? America won the Cold War. It's always the victor in a war who determines what the subsequent evolution of events is going to be. If you look at the various things that America did, it's not just NATO expansion. That's possibly not even the most important. But walking away from the anti-ballistic missile treaty because it was seen as constraining America's ability to develop new weapon systems. The Iraq War, when not just Russia, but many of America's allies were in disagreement. The decision to set up a national missile shield in Europe against missiles supposedly coming from Iran and North Korea. There were a whole load of things which the Russians really didn't like. And they felt, look, after 9/11, we give you enormous help. We gave you transit rights through Russian airspace. We helped to make available bases in Central Asia and so on. And what did we get back? So rightly or wrongly, and this is a question of perception as much as anything else, a perception developed that America was trying to constrain Russia, to contain it, to bring it to its knees and make it follow American diktat. And that is what over the years, and again, lots of Russian fault, but has led to the situation we're in today.
So, Philip Short, as these relations with the West deteriorate, what's happening at home?
I think it's a kind of vicious circle. As relations with the West deteriorate, Russia becomes more authoritarian. This is not something which has just happened under Putin. If you look back at the Soviet Union, that was a trend then, and indeed even earlier in imperial times. And what you've had is, as everything has turned sour with the West, so Russia has moved and Putin's regime has moved from a kind of relatively open authoritarianism to a very closed dictatorship, becoming, I would say, not yet completely totalitarian, but it's moving closer and closer to a totalitarian system.
And are those two things linked? Maybe not a causal relationship, but some kind of correlation between relations with the outside and how Putin is ruling on the inside?
As relations with the outside deteriorate, the hardliners, the hawks in Russia, say, look, we've always told you those Westerners were completely untrustworthy. And their influence increases. And the liberals, those who want closer with relations with the West, they are increasingly excluded from decision making. So it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Relations go down, hawkishness goes up within Russia, the dictatorial part of the regime gets stronger, and freedoms are restrained increasingly, and you get a much more dictatorial system. And that's exactly what we've been seeing happening over the last 3 or 4 years.
Last question, Philip Short. There will be a day when Vladimir Putin is no longer the leader of Russia, but will Moscow's relationship with the West appreciably change, you think?
I don't think it will, not quickly. In 20, 30 years' time, perhaps, indeed probably, because there is a generation, there will be a generation that comes to power that was not alive in Soviet days. But it depends not just on Russia, it depends on us as well, whether we are capable of bringing about a security architecture in Europe, which the Russians feel is not threatening, and where conflict is ruled out. It's both sides. You know, it takes two to tango. Mm-hmm. We both have to change our attitudes, the Russians in particular, but us too.
That's Philip Short, journalist and author, and his new book is called Putin. Philip Short, thank you so much for the time.
Okay, good to talk to you.